I'm bothered.
So
here, welcome. Happy Friday, everybody. I have some questions that we have from people, but I want to first start just to see if anybody has anything off the cuff. Or if not, I can just...
why don't you start with one? Because it's easier to do that.
I know, but I was going to start with Helen, but I thought she said she'd be on today, but she's not.
That's okay.
So this is a really interesting one. Are you ready for the interesting one? You probably heard this. I'm pretty sure this is from Helen. If it's not, I apologize. Should I change my hair because my 8-year-old finds my hair, my gray hair, embarrassing?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear this one?
I did. I read it.
I had quite a good conversation with Emily, that's her daughter, who's 8, about it, and I tried to explain to her that it probably won't give her the social approval she's looking for. However, in light of on the podcast you did on why social emotional stuff is so important, podcast number 481, you know that one, don't you, sweetie?
I did. I was part of it.
I don't remember that at all, actually.
Oh.
I'm panicking. Well, sweetie, she's panicking.
Okay.
No, don't panic. It's all good. We got your back. Right?
Yes. Keep going. Keep going.
Emily doesn't have many friends. And in the gray hair conversation, she said quite factually, I have no friends.
Painful.
I remember it started in 3P and now she's in 5P. I don't know what that means.
Third grade, fifth grade.
Okay.
Just different language.
In the past, Matthew, my husband, and I have stumbled through the same basic situation, knowing she is in pain and basically having no clue what to do about it. It's how I grew up. And I think my husband too. Recently, I've started to once I said someone rejected me who I think of as a friend, it's really painful. So I think she's just admitting something. It's so clumsy and I don't even know what...
if it's the
right direction. I wish we could be like a supportive team for each other. Well, we are.
Mm-hmm.
Any good advice is welcome.
Okay. She's talking about her family, sweetie, not us.
Oh, okay.
I wish we, the family, could be a supportive team each other.
So she's talking to her husband, her daughter, and herself.
Yeah, because basically what she's saying is her daughter told her something that embarrasses her. She said, you know, dye your hair gray, or, you know, dye your hair, I don't like it gray. And she also mentioned in that conversation that she has a friend who, or that she feels that she has no friends, and that what Helen wanted to do was offer kind of like, oh, me too, I've had that experience too. But she felt that the way that she did that was kind of clumsy.
Oh.
And then she's saying, I wish that as a unit, we could be a supportive team for each other.
Got it. Okay. So I'm going to go first.
Okay.
My first question is, Helen, I totally hear you. It's not fun, especially when you hear your kids say things like they don't have any friends. So I first want to just say that that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's probably in evolving. It's not like, first of all, maybe she doesn't have any good friends, but I have a feeling she has some acquaintances. So I'm guessing it's probably not as bad as she's making it up
mm-hmm.
to be. So that's the first thing. And then I got your back. It's not easy to see your kids in pain. So that's the first. But secondly, my next question is, do you want to change your hair? Because if you don't want to change your hair, then I would say, absolutely not. You should not change your hair to accommodate the expectation of your daughter thinking that that's what's going to make her get more good friends. You know, I would say the values that, what I would say is the values I want to teach and the moral compass that I want to follow is that I don't want people to like me for what my hair looks like or what activities I do. I want them to like me for who I am, and for me to change myself to accommodate somebody else is not something that I believe in.
Okay.
And then lastly, I embarrass my kids a lot, sometimes intentionally. Can you vouch for that? And sometimes unintentionally. And it's not an easy thing to deal with, but you know, having embarrassing parents is sometimes part of the gig. You know, we're old. Our bodies don't look like theirs. So just go easy on yourself.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, I agree with Todd that of course you don't need to change your hair unless you want to. And she's just grasping at straws, meaning that she may be bothered because you have gray hair and maybe her friend's parents don't, or she, you know, wants you to look a certain way, and you can relate to her and say, I understand that this bothers you and I hear you. And I know that there is a belief in you that that would somehow change something. And so why I'm saying this is because there's no need to get angry with her. There's no need to give her the big, like Todd was saying, you know, I believe. We don't need to get into a big lesson. Like, you know, we don't need to shame her for speaking up about something with her mom that she's struggling with. What her daughter has somehow connected is my life would be better if my mom looked different or if she did something differently. And and that's why I say she's grasping at straws because she's 8 years old. She doesn't understand, she doesn't understand that that has nothing to do with anything yet. So we can go easy on her and not make it into some, like, you should be ashamed for thinking that, or how dare you put me down, or I would never put my friends down. Sometimes we become 8 years old. You know what I mean? Like if one of our children says something negative about us, then we almost argue or get into a defensive position as if we're their age. And we have to remember that we are the adult and that we can have somewhat of humor around it, you know, like a sense of, well, I understand why you may think that and I hear you, but my hair isn't going to change. But let's talk about, you know, let's talk more about what you're experiencing. Just to kind of say that you got it, you got the message, but that's not really going to change things. And you know, sometimes I say to the girls when they offer me suggestions in that vein, I say, I understand why you might think that, but one of the great things that I have as far as having some age is recognizing that these things that we think are important really don't end up being that important. So instead of lecturing them, I talk about it in a way that's a little more like I'm on their side. Like I understand why they think this, or I understand that, you know, like Todd said, sometimes he on purpose tries to be embarrassing and I wouldn't say
on purpose. I am being myself.
You exaggerate yourself for a group.
Sometimes. But I'm not, the sole purpose is not for me to embarrass my kids, but I know there's things I do that embarrass them. And sometimes I get small and get quiet and don't do that thing. But other times I'm like, yeah, you know, if the time is right, it's time for me to be myself.
Well, what I would say is that I think what Helen is asking is she listened to our podcast about connection and empathy, and connection and empathy doesn't mean to do everything your kids tell you to do. That's not what it means. It means to understand where they're coming from, to not be overly offended by it. You know, my daughters are at the age, they're older than 8, and so they have a little more of a developed, you know, prefrontal, but not much because they're in the adolescent time, and they are very concerned about things that nobody sees. It's kind of part of that age where there is a belief that things would be easier if I had these shoes, or the way that we have, you know, I have to have a coat that hits me right here. Like and we can sit there and argue with them, or we can just could be empathetic about their experience and then let them know what's possible and what's not.
Sweetie, do you want to know a joke I heard from my sister yesterday?
Sure.
What's the difference between a teenager and a toddler?
What?
Nothing.
That's super funny.
I think it's really good.
Well,
Lindsay laughed.
Well, here's the
Aaron's thing. Aaron's smiling.
I think Alyssa's it can smiling. Be disparaging of teenagers to say
on.
That. I mean, and there's no teenagers on here, so I'm not saying disparaging now. I'm not saying you made a mistake. I'm saying that, like, their brain is under another cycle of development. So there is a connection between 3-year-olds and 13-year-olds. We talk about this a lot, not in terms of it being a joke, but like 3-year-olds and 13-year-olds are very similar. They're both doing separation and individuation. They're both going through that developmental experience where they want to pull away from you. That's what 3-year-olds do too. And it's so in a way, the joke is relevant because that's really happening. But I think sometimes if we said that to a teenager, they'd think that we were calling them immature or things that, you know, they may not like.
Sweetie's always being protective over everybody's feelings, even those people's feelings are not even listening.
Well,
to
here's why.
Because they might tell the same joke.
They might tell the same joke. And you have to be thoughtful about something that is not, you know, your teenager might not find that amusing that you're calling them a toddler. You know what I mean? Like they may be like, what the hell? Like that's not nice.
Well, this is part of my problem. I'm always just like, lighten up. But I know my lightening up is sometimes to the detriment of whoever I'm dealing with.
You are 47.
46,
you can
technically.
Whatever. you can lighten up easily because you've got all this history and all this like experience and you're settled down and you're married and you have kids and you have a job and you're like, lighten up everybody. And their life and their brain is like, like all the time. And they're worried about things and their life is at the school and their peers matter to them. And it's really intense. And so for a 46-year-old man to say, lighten up, it doesn't land. Instead, you got to say, sounds like you're going through a lot.
Lighten up, Francis. All right. Okay. All right. We have three questions. We're going to start with
Esty.
Esty. God, I'm just bad at saying her name.
Yes. Practice.
Hi. Hold it. You're still muted. Okay. Now, how about now? Yeah.
It's okay. I respond to anything. So my name is
I know, but we want to get your name.
So my question actually relates to my 7-year-old, almost 8-year-old daughter and her, I guess her style of meltdown. So when she really struggles, where she goes to is she screams and she screams at me and tries to direct me in a way that I struggle with how to manage. And there's a huge part of this that is a trigger within me because I think I, you know, as a kid and growing up, you know, I was always the kid that did what everyone asked them to do. And so I think as she, you know, screams at me and is telling me what to do, there's an immediate, very visceral pushback. Like I don't want to necessarily just accommodate. But I struggle with where that ends and where the boundaries for what's appropriate and okay to do to another person, you know, where the line between the two of those are. So we had what happened this morning is probably just a really good example of how this goes for her, but there's clearly something else underneath all of this, but she didn't have the shirt that she wanted for school this morning. And it was a huge problem for her. And so it looked like her in her room screaming and yelling, for me to come. And, you know, I go in a room and then, try and navigate, you know, we could try this shirt or, you know, all the usual problem solving things just to solve the immediate problem at hand. And of course it wasn't really about the shirt, so none of that was acceptable to her, so she didn't really want to allow me to help her, but she wouldn't allow me to leave either. And I've got three kids. So, you know, at that point I said, right now, I don't think we can get through this problem. Here's the three options that I see. I'll come back. And, you know, I went down to make breakfast and it's just her upstairs screaming at me, you need to come right now and come upstairs and you've got to help me right now. And it becomes very demanding and aggressive the way that she becomes in all these situations. And it's, you know, when she's in a rough place, it can be quite frequent, like multiple times a day that it looks like this. And so, you know, on the one hand, I feel like, you know, me just going up and down the stairs 50 times in the morning is first of all, not okay. It's not fair to me. It's not, doesn't help our morning, just go, you know, get done. But it's also, you know, I feel like I end up in this place where I'm just kind of cutting her off and I'm not able to empathize in a way that she can actually accept. And you know, even if I try and go, like, it seems like you're really struggling, this is really tough for you this morning, she just gets mad. Yes. You know, like, and I think some of that is that I probably am not authentically feeling very empathetic in that, and she sees right through it.
Right.
But I feel like I've just got no tools in those moments to be able to just get through this situation and help her feel even a little bit connected and empathized with. And and I know some of that's my own stuff, but you know, in those moments, I just feel really at a loss. Mm. So I guess that's the...
Wow. Okay. Awesome. I'm going to hit you on mute. I'm going to go first because okay. I know you got some things. So first of all, normalizing the situation, everybody who has been there with their kid, raise their hand of melting down and not being able to help with the meltdown. And it's so funny. I think she has wonderful self-awareness. Like the fact that you know that it's not about the shirt is not an easy thing to grasp. It has nothing to do with the shirt. It might have to do with what the school day is about to present itself. And it might have to do with the crappy night's sleep. Might have to do with what happened yesterday. Might have to do with something else. So the fact that you know that is important. To be able to teach in that moment is also an impossibility. When somebody's melting down, you can't teach them. So you got to do what you can to not fix the problem, but just manage it as best you can. And it sounds like that's exactly what she's doing. I know she's asking us for more tools, and I don't even know if I have any of those right now, but the fact that you know that, so the only thing I would say is that when things are calm and people are in a good place and 7 or 8 year olds are not melting down, that's when you can maybe have a conversation to connect of like, here is what happened. This is kind of how it makes me feel. This is how it impacts the rest of the household. You can't do that when she's melting down, but maybe you could do it later on that day or the next night or something like that. So the only tool that I have to offer you is to use, to try to create that communication once things are calm. But when you're in the midst of chaos, there's probably very little you can do to make her stop melting down. Mm-hmm. So that's all I got.
Yeah. Well, we can't stop anyone's behavior, but I wanted to start with what you said about like the difference between you and her. You know, that you were someone who accommodated or who did what you were told, which, you know, it's like, I kind of look at our emotions as being one way or the other. So first of all, we all have emotions. We all have the same experience with emotions, but we, when we're children or even as adults, we either go one way or the other. Either we express them really loudly or we shut them down. Obviously, there's gray in between there. But I'm only saying that to you because sometimes we look at our children and we think, gosh, they're so different than us. Like, you know, the two examples that I hear from people is either my child is so much like me, it scares me and I can't deal with her because it's like dealing with myself, or the polar opposite, which is they're so different. Like, my best friend's daughter, you know, sometimes she brings that up, like the, what I would have done is the polar opposite of what my daughter would have done, you know, like where she sees this difference. And that is sometimes the foundation of where your emotional experience is coming from, that you would have never done this. Why is she doing it this way? And I want you to know that it's kind of the exact same experience of emotions, and you took one path and she took another. So it's not as if there's a problem or you taught her wrong, or that you need to feel guilty, or that she needs to do more like what you would do. There's this happy medium in between. And I'm only bringing that up because I think that's where a lot of our emotion stems from, is our belief system about something's happening and it shouldn't be. Right there, we're like resisting it. So going into the, take all that away then, you know, put that aside. Let's just talk about the moment when she's having that experience and she calls you into the room. Like everybody raising their hand, I've had that experience a number of times. And I think that, and again, I can say this now in a calm place. Sometimes if I'm in it, I don't always say the best things, but I think the best thing we can do is the old standby, which is, what can I do to help you? Because I think sometimes if we say things like, here's another shirt, what about this shirt? I just washed this shirt. Then we're getting into the minutia of the issue that's not really the issue. We're trying to solve a problem that's not really the problem to solve. Instead, it's, how can I support you? She may say, find me another shirt. And you say, okay. And then you pull some out, but you don't give a lot of language. You talk less, maybe lay them on the, you know, the bed. And if she's like, not that one because of that, say, okay, what else can I do to help you? And try to keep your distance from the issue, because you already know the issue isn't really the issue. She's just having a lot of emotion, like Todd said, because something came up, she had a bad dream, she's afraid about the day, maybe she doesn't even know. Like, sometimes I have bad days and I don't know why I'm having a bad day. Like, I don't have any like data to support why I'm having a bad day. It's just, it is. And then it is, I think this is another thing you're looking for, it is okay to leave her to attend to your other kids. It's, you're not abandoning her, and you are being very, you're not saying, if you don't stop, you know, crying, I'm going to leave. You're saying, listen, I know you're upset. I see it. And I want to help you right now. I have to make breakfast for everybody. I got to make sure everybody gets out the door. I will be back. Or if you can't be back, say, you know, I'll come, whatever it may be that you can do, you know, or we can, I know we can't solve all this today, but we can, you know, when you come downstairs to eat, we can talk about it again. Or I don't have that worked out quite yet, but let me finish my thought before you go on. But it's super important in that situation for two things to happen. For her to be heard, which is you staying calm, because remember, she's energy, as we all are, and her energy is on high alert and moving fast. So the only thing you can offer her in that moment, it's not about the perfect words, it's about keeping your energy, just breathe. She's going to say things that your inner child doesn't like. you're going to try and resist against it, just breathe, because all she needs is a calmer energy. Again, that just in itself can bring her down a notch. You don't have to get involved in the minutia. And then like Todd said, once it's over, because again, right now it's like it doesn't ever feel like it's going to resolve, but somehow the dynamic changes, she gets to school, something resolves it for that moment. When she's doing better, you don't have to be like, okay, let's talk about this morning. Like it's a lecture. Mm-hmm. Say to her, honey, you know, this morning, what else could I have done to help you? Because I've been thinking all day, what else could I have said? So instead of acting like it's a problem and she's a problem that you need to solve, you're instead saying, I'm taking ownership of, I really don't know what to say, which is completely honest, right? That I say that to my girls all the time. Like, I'm not sure what I could have said to help. And if you can let me know, and she may say nothing, you couldn't have said anything, just be there and say, I will do everything I can to be there, beyond the fact that I have to make sure I get your, you know, your siblings' food available to them. And maybe you can even have humor about that. You know, like, I'm doing my best, you know, but it's, she's eight and it won't always be this. Her emotions may always be strong, but the way she's saying, using them now, it's very eight, you know, like it's not going to always be so tantrumy because she grows up. But what you can, what the hope is that she'll never feel bad about having the feeling. She just may need support resolving it. So, because as she gets older, it'll look different. She may slam her door or yell or not want to talk or be passive aggressive. And if you already have an open dialogue about emotion and what can I do to support you when you're this way? I mean, Todd and I even have that, you know, like when I get shut down, what can I do? You know, this is part of being human. So she's just dealing with her feelings in an 8-year-old way. So anyway, go ahead.
So your job is, Estee, is to stay calm in the midst of chaos, which is really, really hard to do, but that's your work. And that's what your daughter is trying to teach you. Can you love me and stay calm in the midst of trying to help other kids and yourself all at the same time? So that's really your work. Lisa said real quick, almost every school morning, I encounter a meltdown. And since it's just me and four kids, I usually try to actually solve the problem quickly. But after the conference, I tried something Glennon mentioned, literally sitting next to them and saying, man, that sucks. You can't tie your shoes or whatever it is. And don't even offer a solution. It works like magic. At least that's what Lisa says. And then Aaron asked, do you think the same approach would resonate with younger kiddos? Would they remember by the end of the day?
Would they remember that something happened? That they had an emotional experience, Aaron? Is that what, you know, they may not remember, like, how, because they've had so much time, you know, kids are so present. But it's okay to say, you know, asking them if they do remember this morning and what happened, and then saying, and if they don't, say, that's great. Say, but I've been thinking about it and you let me know if there's another way I can support you when you're upset, because one of my jobs as a parent is when you're feeling sad or having big emotions, I want to be there to help you manage it and support you as you manage it. And notice the language I'm using. We're not going to manage it for them. I'm going to support you, be with you, and, you know, be by your side as you move through it. So you don't have to do that every time. Like, it's not, especially if your kid is having a meltdown every morning, you don't have to every day say, what could I have done? But if you're doing that enough where it's a norm, what we're trying to do always is normalize a conversation around emotions. Because what I hear back most of the time when I suggest this is parents will say, I don't want to bring it up because I don't want it to happen again. I get that. I get the feeling of why everything's calm. I don't want to jinx it. But then we are we're pretending the emotions are one thing and it's like alternate realities. Instead of merging our worlds and saying, even when we're calm, that still did happen. So how can I support you? And you're not looking at them differently. You know, like the story, I know that my oldest daughter would feel as if I was disappointed in her after those experiences. And she'd be embarrassed and she didn't want to talk about it because she was embarrassed that I was disappointed. And I would just be very upfront. I'd say, I'm not angry with you that you were upset. I get upset too. There's no anger. It's about how can I support you when you're going through that? You know, it's different than you're in trouble for doing it, which is a very normal parenting thing that we do. You had a tantrum this morning. I'm taking away your phone. Mm-hmm. That message is that kind of emotion isn't welcome in this house versus, you know, for everybody, if you've got a kid who's hitting or a kid who's like, you know, hurting somebody else or throwing things, those are things that need to be addressed. Like we, in this house, we don't hurt ourselves, each other, you know, especially when they're little, starting that language. There are other ways to resolve our emotion, but they're going to try that. Little ones try hitting. They try it.
So two last things before we move to Anita, because then we have Anita, then Kate, and then Dawn has a piece at the end. So two other maybe tools are breath work. Can you take a breath when you feel like you're about to, when you feel you're about to react, take a breath, or a mantra. And one of the mantras that I was taught that helps me is say to yourself or under your breath, I can handle this. Like sometimes that helps just create a little space between a melting down kid and you saying or doing or behaving in a way that is going to just backfire pretty hard. So,
and also this too shall pass. And also a bracelet that I got my mom after my dad passed away. It's what Dory says in Finding Nemo. It says, just keep swimming, like just keep going and not keep going, pretending things aren't happening, but keep living. Because that's what swimming means. Just keep living, you know. And like I've mentioned many times, Matthew McConaughey's tagline is JKL, just keep living. Same thing. These are the mantras that remind us to stay out of our head and get back into our heart.
All right. Anita with her mom, Rose, in the background. Everybody wave their hand to Rose. Hi, Rose. There she is.
Hi.
Okay, Anita, what do you got?
Okay, so my situation is my daughter, who's almost 14. She has a scoliosis, so this is a health issue. And this, I brought this up on a Facebook post a couple weeks back for something else. But so my issue is right now she has to wear a brace. Mm. It's like this dynamic brace that has like straps and elastics and stuff. She has to be wearing that, and it's a limited period of time because she's in a growth place right now. So probably for another 6 months or a year, she has to keep wearing it. The doctor is prescribing her to be wearing that for like 20 hours a day. She was wearing it last year. She stopped for a while in November. We let it go. It was causing her so much emotional stress. She was just like horrified by it. She chose to stop wearing it. We let it go. Recently, we got x-rays for her spine and she had some, it got a bit worse. So she agreed that she'd start wearing it again. So we brought her to the doctor and she had it refitted and she's supposed to start wearing it again. We made a schedule for her. And so my concern or my issue right now is, I know this is a health thing and it's really critical. It's a critical period. And I can't force her, right? You can't forcibly put something on somebody, especially at 14. But you know, there's consequences to it. Like, I know it's her future health. It's her spine. It's really serious. But at the same time, it's an everyday struggle. Did you put your brace on? And she's wearing it like a couple of hours a day. Even overnight, she'll take it off. She'll put it on at night. She'll take it off halfway through the night, like maybe 4 to 6 hours a day. It's not enough. So my struggle is, I can't force her, but how can I support? How can I encourage? How can I, without threatening her and scaring her and saying, you're going to need surgery, you're going to have problems for the rest of your life in the future. So that's where I'm like, she has to own it. She has to take responsibility for it and be accountable. But, you know, I've always got to be guiding her and supporting her and in a positive way, you know. So that's where I'm struggling with, how do I
deal with it?
Hmm. Exactly. So it's, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks, Anita. This is tricky. Because you know, we're used to dealing with emotional stuff and this is something physical that could have longer term impact. I kind of feel, and not to minimize your struggle, but there's certain things that have to be done in our house. Like, you need to do your homework. I don't care if you fail the test, but you need to do your homework. I kind of feel, or like we've had friends who have had to wear the patch over the eye because they've had a weak eye. Mm-hmm. Like, there's certain things that are
Jenny with Faye. what she's had to do.
There's certain things that are non-negotiable. And your 14-year-old, in this respect, you know more than she does. And she's living in the present. That's what kids are good at. They live in the present moment. Right now, I want to live without this back brace on. But it has long-term impact on it. So I know, Anita, that you're a loving human being and you would never physically force this onto her. But this is one of those things where you kind of have to leave as little room for negotiation as possible because it's too important, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but she knows that. And she's asking how then, yeah. You know, because I don't think there's any question of the importance. And I think that, and again, you know, it is tricky because this is a different, you know, this has consequences. What I took from what you said the most is that it's going to be, it's 6 to 9 months that there is an end to this. And that's kind of the place where you need to start, is that meaning that you say to her, and again, it doesn't have to be a big sit down conversation. You know, this is ongoing, but we've got a period of time here and I'm going to support you the best I can in this period of time. And we're going to do the best we can, kind of like a marathon, mm-hmm. to make sure that this brace is on as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't get too attached to the 20 hours. Yeah. I would get attached to the best we can do each day.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be some days that maybe, like you said, she gets 6 hours. There's going to be some that she gets 12. She might find she might sleep through a night once or twice where she has it on the whole time. Like, I don't, like you were saying, I don't know if you can really micromanage every second of this. I think in any situation, especially with doctor's orders, there's a best that we can do within that realm, considering all the other pieces. But that to reiterate what Todd said, but that this isn't a negotiation. You know, this isn't me saying, please. This is me saying, this is a health issue. And what's most important to me is your development and our, you know, and us relating to each other and your emotional well-being. But we got to balance that with this. Like, for example, if she had a dance, she's not going to wear it that night. You know what I mean? Like, where you're like, I understand. And I'm using dance as an example, a metaphor for anything. You know, she's going to a pool party. She's got whatever it may be. Those 3 hours, I get it. It's too intense. But we've got to figure out together. This is like, and this is the thing, is when someone's 14, there's this very fine line between you have to do it yourself and learn responsibility, because that's obviously what we're trying to teach our kids in the long haul. But when they're younger, we have to kind of be shoulder to shoulder with them while they're doing it. Not carry the weight for them, but this is a family effort. You know, we're all supporting you in this. It isn't, this is your problem, do it. And I know you're not saying that at all, because you're completely invested and you're trying to figure out how to maintain her emotional well-being while doing it. But I would go toward, like you said, creating a schedule that you already did. And I remember from your posts, like she also has to do things like swim and everything, and kind of maybe taking her pulse each day about what's the best you can do today. You know, like, what, give me the layout of the day, and when are you going to wear it, and when are your breaks, or, you know, and again, I know that's not ideal. I know the doctors are saying 20 hours, no doubt about it, but there, as a mother, there's, you know, there's moments,
day-to-day reality
that you have to, you know, deal with. But it's not about, oh, today you don't have to wear it at all. Mm-hmm. It's about, how are we going to negotiate this today? And there is a sense of, for you, Anita, recognizing that the next 6 months is like a marathon. It's not going to be one simple solution. It's going to be every day. We're going to have a discussion about this. Some days are going to go well. Some days are going to be challenging, and we are going to do the best we can. We're going to do this together, and I'm going to support you the best way I can. And also, you have to let go of doing it perfectly. So does she, because it's not going to happen. Nothing, you know, any kind of, that's the thing about doctor's orders versus human instincts, is that it's easy for doctors, it's easy to read Google and be like, this is what we have to do. And then the making it happen can be challenging. You know, it's like, So I don't have any easy answers for you, except to let you know that the challenge that you're feeling or the concern that you have, of course, and that you, it's teamwork rather than all on your shoulders or even all on hers. You know, I love that your mom is there. You guys are doing this as a group, and it, you're not going to remind each other. You're not going to remind her in a, you know, negative way. It's like any kind of medical concern, like a kid who has to go in and out of the hospital. You know, these are, we're dealing with something that's really serious, and we're going to do the best we can every day. We're going to keep our sense of humor. We're going to have days where it just does not go well, but that's not the end. That's why I keep using, is marathon a good analogy? That it's not,
well, you can't arrive, it's not a sprint in that day. It's there's going to be good days, bad days, right, and everything else. So you talk about do the best you can. You used to have that thing in our bathroom. It says, when the day is over and you've done your best with results and peace. I would consider that, Anita. Don't be attached to the outcome. Like, oh, this today she only worked for X amount of hours or not. Like, if you did your best that day, then that's what the day is. And then I don't know if this works. And this
Use that word though. How about behavior modification?
Behavior modification, incentivize these next 6 to 9 months somehow. I don't know what that means, but I think you might be able to. And then I have a friend whose daughter had to do this for 21 hours out of the day. Her name is Marie. That's the mom. If there's anybody, there's probably support groups for this. I mean, I would love to
Could she talk to Marie?
Yes, of course.
Okay.
Marie, she lives in Portland, Oregon, and her daughter Maya had to do this. And I think they're coming out of the woods now. But if you'd like, I would be happy to reach out to Marie on your behalf and say, can one of, because she loves the podcast. She's not on Team Zen, but she loves the podcast. Or if there's other people, like there may be support groups.
Well,
for
and
this.
That's what I was going to say is my girlfriend, Jenny, her daughter has spina bifida and different situation, not the same as, but similar in the things that she's expected to do, braces that she's expected to wear, and same kind of concerns that she either is going to walk with a walker or she's going to be in a wheelchair, you know, and these are the same kind of like concerns. So the, you know, to, I would give you Jenny's email too, if you'd like to talk with her, because sometimes someone who is like dealing on it day to day is a lot better than the general that Todd and I are offering. We're trying to give you kind of a perspective, but that doesn't help you in the moment. And you need your people who totally get it, who can say yes. And here's what, you know, here's an opportunity.
So I'm going to give Anita a chance to chime in, because it's, I think it's important enough for her to hear her feedback.
Yeah,
before
absolutely.
I do that, Nikki says, it reminds her of her daughter with her eating disorder, who's also 14. What worked is the best was to say, I have got this, as in take the choice away from her and make it a hard rule. Ooh. All other activities stop until the brace is on. For example, school, TV, sports. This is the only time this is the case. And our family is for health reasons. It actually can relieve some stress for her because it's not a choice. Also support her to take other stresses away. Lots of love and support.
Ooh, so, I like that, Nikki. Thank that you good. For that.
So Anita, that was a lot. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot, but I like the fact where you're saying not to focus on how many hours per day, because that's something that I was kind of like freaking out a little bit, you know, well, we agreed that we'd read this number, and today she's like, oh, I don't feel like it. I just don't want to. And I think because we've gone a period where she has sort of gotten away with not wearing
it.
That's become her norm. Right. And so she kind of like stopped flexing that muscle where she had to force herself. So if I need to be, or me and my husband too, need to be the bad guy and say, and incentivize, like, I'm going to look into that and see if we can find ways to, like, you know, support and motivate her and, you know, rewards, you know, like bribery. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the word.
That's the word that Kathy would.
Well, it's another word. It's the same word. So,
it is.
But thank you. Yeah, there's definitely a huge emotional side to it, obviously.
Yes.
But
but
there is an end in sight, and she has great doctors. And but thank you for that. I'll take it and run with it.
You're
welcome. Yeah, and just that every day will feel a little different. And I love the combination of what you just said and what Nikki said, which is, you know, what Nikki's saying is there's just some things. I got this. You know, like if she's going somewhere, she's gonna be gone for 5 hours. The brace is on. Like, this isn't a negotiation because you're going to be gone. Now, when you come home, you know, she may take it off and you may say, are you taking a break? But you can even bring up, Anita, there was a period of time you didn't do this and we can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. That option is out. but discussing during, you know, like that, because your concern is valid. So bring up that literal concern with her, which is we're not in the boat anymore where you get to just decide, nope, that ship has sailed. We're in a new ship. This is my ship metaphor. We're in a different boat.
So before we go over to Kate, one last thing that Nikki said was, because her daughter has an eating disorder, she says, we pay for kilos. I think if my kid had an eating disorder, I would pay for kilos. Mm-hmm.
And again, especially because of what we're talking about, that it's a period of time.
Yeah.
Meaning that if you create a plan with her that this 6 months is a special time in your life, this isn't always going to be your life. We're not going to pay you all the time. This is not how the real world is going to reward you, mm-hmm. you know, but in this 6 months, let's make something, you know, like let's put, you know, put something toward a phone, or let's put something toward an opportunity or a trip, or, and again, I know money, I don't want to throw money at a problem, but there can be,
if there was ever a reason to throw money at a problem,
yeah.
it would be eating disorders and scoliosis right. during this, you know?
Well, and I guess what I say, I don't know Anita's situation. Like, I don't want to say, oh, the only way to do this is money, no, because you there's know, emotional connections.
And you
too.
Can get creative, Anita, yeah. so you know where we're going with
but
that.
But so when you, sometimes, and this is the thing we always have to do on Team Zen and just as people in the world, Todd and I talk about certain things about kind of like what Helen ran into, where she was like, I'm not going to dye my hair gray. And then she heard our show talking about connection is everything. And then she's like, oh crap, maybe I should dye my hair. It's like, I'm not a huge fan of paying kids to like use the bathroom if they can already do that. But if I had a kid who 6 months needed to wear a brace, I'm going to try a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So sometimes we get too connected to, you said this, but then there's a paradox in all of this. There is no absolute. There is creativity and trying things. And then, you know, she may do great for 6 months. Let's play this optimistic game. You know, you incentivize it and she does great. And then after that, when she doesn't have to do it as much, she may be like, so can you pay me for this or that? And you're like, no.
That's when you say no.
That's when you like start to go the other way,
right.
where this isn't a medical emergency and you can have some humor about it. But, you know, you roll with it, Anita, and don't, like, one thing that maybe you can leave at the door is guilt mm-hmm. and shame and, you know, really focus on this 6 months is a whole different kind of parenting right now.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to love her the best I can, and other people are going to come in and save me and save her, and we're going to do this as a team.
So last thing, just give me a nod or a no, Anita. Do you want us to contact our friends who have had to deal with certain similar situations or no? Okay. All right.
We'll send you emails.
We'll do that. Let's go over to Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Sweet. So I wrote in, so it's going to be more succinct in that email, but basically I've been struggling between having been through a bad experience and getting past it. And in my mind, like, I don't dwell on it. Anymore, but then also having initiated a complaint resolution, kind of more legal thing to kind of take care of that situation in the past. And I guess just trying to look for that outside perspective to be like, yes, you can have both.
Absolutely.
Like, yes, you can be over it and seek justice kind of thing.
Mm. Yes. Yes. Oh. Totally two different things. I love that you already know that. You know, and again, even being over it, and I know you're just using the language at hand that we have, but it's okay that you're not, even if I know you are in the sense that you're not dwelling on it constantly. Like, I totally understand that, but it really energetically hasn't resolved because there still is, you know, there's kind of wires out there still helping to manage the legal things that need to be done. So it's almost like trying to forget something that's still there. You can look at it through different eyes, meaning you're no longer as triggered by it as you used to be. You're no longer as overwhelmed by it. But the truth is there's a process that you still need to go through. So it's kind of like something that hasn't been quite put away yet. And that's okay that it's not quite put away, because it can't be until all these other legal things are resolved. You know, I think about this, and this is similar to your experience, like with people who have been, injured or in some way or assaulted in some way. And then it takes years for things to go to trial or go to court, and they have to, you know, not keep it alive and open, but they can't quite close the door because there's still so many pieces that are open. And it's why, you know, people will say, you know, like why trials can be so horrendous, because they go on so long and, you know, people have to keep that emotion alive. So first of all, I think what you're asking is that paradox normal or is that okay? And the answer is absolutely yes, that you can be like emotionally through the most difficult part, but also have a sense of this is still lingering, of course, you know, and there will be, it will over time, you know, as things progress with the legal part, it will start to get less, but this is just, think of it as another phase, Kate. Rather than it's either this or that, open or close, it's just another phase of the healing. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's not quite done. That doesn't mean that you can have days where you just forget. You just are like, I'm not dwelling on that today. Totally fine, because it's not in your hands anymore. But there's no way to pretend that it doesn't bother you. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we work so hard to be like, that doesn't bother me. I'm over it. But we're not, because it's still open and alive. Mm-hmm. And so you are literally living the paradox, and you don't have to feel as if you need to work harder. Mm-hmm. You just kind of, there's an acceptance. The word I've been using lately, Kate, is surrender. And I use that, and just so everybody knows, surrender doesn't mean giving in or giving up. Surrender means I don't have control over all of this. And that's one thing we need to know, is we don't have control. Like we think we do. We can do things, we can take steps, we can practice self-care, all that. But there are certain things, like Marianne Williamson in her earlier books always used to talk about, in a meditation, put certain things on an altar and let it sit there and let something greater take care of it. Because you can't, like you can't control it. We think we're, and I always like that idea, I don't have an altar, I have a windowsill in my meditation area.
It's a small altar, sweetie.
Yeah, and I think of it as an altar, these things that I can't control, and not just the outcome of your legal case or whatever it may be, but even the fact that I feel certain ways. You know, I have to surrender to this instead of, you know, in my mind, make myself be a different person than I am. I'm a very emotional person.
You are?
Yes.
So here's my deal. Consequences of actions are real. So what I want to say to you, Kate, it's not the what, it's the how. So whatever legal action you're talking about doesn't mean that you should or shouldn't do something. Whatever you're doing is what you should be doing. It's how are you doing it? So, you know, if somebody harmed you and you felt the need to pursue legal action or whatever it is, yes, that's what you do. That's what, we live in a world where behaviors have consequences. It's my question would be, you know, because Kathy's like, well, you don't have control over anything. The only thing you do have control over is your ability to the how. Are you going to be bitter and closed and frustrated and mean and angry? And there's benefits to that too. But then can you loosen the grip a little bit? Kathy talked about letting go. Can you do this while at the same time being soft while doing it? I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of what I thought. It's not the what you do, it's how you're doing it. So I feel like sometimes we're like, well, am I doing this or am I doing that? And sometimes the answer is yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
Or no and no.
Yeah. So, you know, you're not alone, Kate, like that feeling of being in the in-between, you know, it's just uncomfortable sometimes.
Well, and honestly, for me, it's a little challenging. It would be easier, and I don't want you to do it. Plus, we don't have time for it. But if I kind of knew the details, I would be able to identify it easier. But I'm going to unmute you, Kate, just to see if whatever we said resonated with you and if you had any follow-up questions.
Yeah, that all resonates. And I just wanted to hear the author that Kathy mentioned one more time.
Who did I mention?
Marianne Williamson.
Oh, Marianne Williamson. So she's running for president, by the way, for those of you who know Marianne.
What?
Williamson. Yeah, she's running for president. I don't think she's going to make it as far as the debates. I think she was the first one to announce probably about 4 or 5 months ago. Marianne Williamson has been around since, like, I think I read her first book when I was 20 years old. A lot of her books are very spiritual in nature. They're all spiritual in nature. She's the one who analyzed A Course in Miracles. And then she rewrote it in a way that everybody could understand. It's called A Return to Love. I would start with A Woman's Worth. That was my favorite by her. So Marianne Williamson, A Woman's Worth. It's not that long, but man, it's intense. And she talks about things like this. And especially, Kate, if anything that you experienced had to do with being a woman, I don't know if it did or not, but you know, if there was a piece of a gender issue in there, then this book will be double for you. So you'll kind of get that piece plus the being able to handle the in-between, the paradox. And, you know, as I'm talking to you, I'm thinking about, aren't we all in an in-between, you know, just like we were just saying to, Anita, you know, she's in this in-between place with her kids' medical issues. And, you know, Estee's in this place with her child's maturity, development, and tantruming. And we're all kind of waiting. We live in that limbo all the time. All of us do. And so to Todd's point, we have to find a way to do it rather than to get beyond it, because then something else comes up.
Anything else, Kate?
Cool. That's it. Thanks.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your
question. This is a great question.
Last but not least is Dawn. Dawn, are you there?
Hi, Dawn.
I am. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Loud and clear. So what were some of the things that you shared on the Facebook page that I thought were a good idea for you to share here?
Okay. Thank you. I have a question that I want some people to discuss this with that I didn't feel like was appropriate for this call because it's really for a select group of people.
Okay.
I'm just going to read the post because my fear was, I think maybe some people aren't always on the post, but maybe they listen to the calls.
Good.
On the feed, I mean. I'm looking for one or more people to have a private discussion with using Zoom video or something similar about ABA therapy for children living with autism. My daughter was recently diagnosed ASD level 1 without accompanying intellectual disability, and getting ABA therapy is one of the recommendations we have been given. Complicating factor, my brother is a BCBA running his own practice, and I'm having big thoughts about ABA, and I have actually for a long time, but I don't trust he can objectively help me work through these thoughts just yet. I do plan to talk with him and hear everything he has to say, but for now, I would feel better about working out some of these questions. I wrote myself, but what I meant was with you guys.
Yeah.
I know there are different types of ABA, naturalistic being the one that I am most interested in, and looking for other parents in the same boat as me who can have a safe, balanced discussion about ABA, looking at it from all angles, including a conscious parenting perspective. I posted two articles to my post that I felt were really great about posting people on both sides of the fence on it. And I was introduced to new arguments I had never considered on both sides. And that's what I'm looking for. It's not like a bashing session like, oh, we hate it, or rah, 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 it's the only choice. I really would love to have a nuanced discussion on it. And one from this place of conscious parenting, for sure. So you can PM me, Dawn Dockey. And I've already, hi, Lisa, thank you for responding. I saw Lisa did, thank you. And anybody else, I'm really eager to have this conversation.
Awesome.
So, Dawn, this is what we'll do. I'm sorry, Toddy, I interrupted you.
So a few quick things. One is we kind of tried to do this a year ago. We set up these triads, and it didn't really work out. And now I feel like it's happening a little bit more organically. So first of all, Dawn, thank you for suggesting this. And you're right, not everybody's on Facebook. So the more that we can communicate with one another. So I'm glad you brought this up. So, and there's a lot more people that will listen to this that are not live on this call. So the first thing is, Dawn, you gave your Facebook PM thing. So if anybody is listening to this live, or if they're listening to it, you know, this week, go to Facebook and private message Dawn and say you want to be in there.
Or email us and we'll connect you to Dawn. So if you're not on Facebook, you know, for people who are listening who are not on Facebook, email Kathy at zenparentingradio.com and we'll connect you to Dawn.
And then we are whatever professional. We bought the Zoom technology where we can set that up for you. So to no cost to Team Zen people, we won't be on it, but we will facilitate the call. We'll set it up. We'll send it out. Like, that's just one small thing we can do to, you know, create a platform for you guys to communicate with
whenever you want. Like, that's, it really just takes Todd typing it in and then we send you the link. Can they be the administrator though?
I think we can give you administration access. We'll figure it out one way or another. So we're more than happy to do that. And then we did have Debbie Reber on, who wrote the book called Differently Wired. Dawn, you're familiar with her, I assume. Mm-hmm. Okay. I see your thumbs up.
And we am. And I actually posted,
No, go ahead.
Oh, I posted this exact same question in her Facebook group, Tilt Together. Mm-hmm. And I know where this group comes from as far as self-awareness, conscious parenting, and I just don't know where they all are. And I very much want to hear, but you guys are the people that I would feel the safest with discussing this, if that makes sense. And I'm going to talk to them too, but I'm very eager to talk to this group.
Yeah, I love your language about nuance, because that's like one of my favorite words ever is, like you said, it's not about something's bad, something's good. It's that gray area of how can we get the best of everything, like without demonizing anything, you know, like, and knowing what's best for my family is different than your family, but we're still on the same team. You know, we're doing this, our kids have different needs, different personalities. You know, that's why we love Debbie's work. And obviously you do too, is she totally gets this, but you're right. Not everybody who follows her necessarily, you know, there's no perfection in this, but so we will, set this up.
You just email me or Kathy and we'll figure it out. I do have one qualifying question for you, Dawn. If somebody doesn't have any direct experience with a child who's on the spectrum or differently wired, do you want to keep this sacred to people that are dealing with this directly? Or if somebody just wants to pitch in and lend a helping hand or a supportive ear? And I don't think there's any wrong answer. I just want to make sure that we know.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer would be to that. I'm like 4 weeks into this. We just found out. And so I'm really raw myself. My gut instinct is I think I would like to keep it with just people that have been on this path or are currently on this path, but I don't mean that in a way that nobody else deserves to hear it. So I don't know.
I would say trust your gut.
Trust your gut.
And your gut says just people that have gone through it, then that's the right answer.
And at least start there.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys find that you build a nice community, then, you know, we'll see. But for now, just start with the people who get it, because I know what you mean when you say you're raw. Mm-hmm. You really don't want outsider opinion about what you should do. You want people who really emotionally get it. And you know, and that wouldn't be Todd and I. Like, we'll support you in any way, but I would not be an ideal person because I would be coming at it this way rather than this way. So let's, we'll put that together. And
for sure,
one thing we should also do, the third method of communication, obviously the Zen Talks and obviously the Facebook page, but we send emails to everybody too. So the next email, those emails that you send out, include that in the bottom.
Good idea.
And so then people can, with either Dawn's email or ours.
I'm going to send an email after this, the recording of this, giving them that heads up. So, and then just selfishly, nothing, I can't speak for Kathy, but nothing makes me happier than you guys reaching out with one another and support. Like, that's why we created this. So, and then one other thing, Sarah said, Kathy, is the book you read every morning, Mark Nepo's Book of Awakening? I had a friend recommend it.
Yes.
Okay.
And the book that I'm writing is like Mark Nepo's The Book of Awakening. I still got another year, but that I love his book so much. I didn't really do it like his. It's different, but I love reading something every day. And I've been doing his book for like 6 years that I based the structure of my book around his.
And then last but not least, I'm going to try to structure this, but I haven't done it yet. So for anybody who's a Team Zen member that went to the conference, they got a water bottle. This actually isn't it. It's the same model, but it doesn't have the label on it. I
feel like they're sitting everywhere.
I know, it's just
house.
Not where we need it. If you didn't go to the conference and you've been a Team Zen member,
here it is. Lisa's got hers.
There it is, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you've been on the team for a year, or you paid a year in advance. Like, I don't want people that just signed up to get it, but anybody who's been in a year, just send me an email and I'll mail one out to you.
It has to be a year?
Yeah. That's my way of just qualifying. Yeah.
What if someone's been in 9 months?
No. It's going to be their anniversary gift. The 1 year anniversary. Oh,
okay. Well, that makes sense. I thought you were like, you're not really in because they're in after 1 month.
Of course
they're in,
but it's just a way of saying thank you for being a part of it. So
Zen.
And Alyssa loves her new Teams. I actually do too because of the functionality of it. I actually made a big project in it. So
we had a lot of water bottles delivered to our house till Todd could find the right prototype.
Yes, I got the one I liked. So
I was fine with all of them.
If you weren't at the conference and you've been in Teams in for a year or you paid annually, send me an email and I'll get one out to you until I get off my butt and actually figure out who's been in a year and wasn't at the conference. So
we love you guys. We're going to let you go. But just so you know, whatever you're dealing with, because we're all dealing with stuff, like you're not alone. I want you to know that sometimes I sit up thinking about things and I'm worrying about things. And I just think to myself, this is just the human experience. Like, it's not Kathy is, you know, it's we're all in this together. Good. The good parts too, not just the challenges. But when we're looking at the sun, like last night, the moon was beautiful. Mm. And when you look at the moon and it's so big and you're like, gosh, everybody can see that moon.
Yep.
Like, we're all in this. And I just never want you to forget that when you're having those really dark moments that, you know, the moon is still there. And we're still around.
And then I'm going to unmute everybody and everybody's going to say goodbye. So everybody say goodbye.
We love you.
Bye. Adios. Bye. Hit you guys later. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.